This is CliffCentral.com.
This is the transformation platform, part of the 3-hour leadership transformation platform. So we run it from 12 to 3, but from 2 to 2:30 we talk transformation issues, global, local. It's a very important part of our 3-hour leadership conversation, and we've got someone in here who can help us make sense of a very important element of transformation in our country. Last week we had Catherine Constantinides in, who's going to Washington for this fellow, Nelson Mandela Fellow Program, I think. I don't know exactly what it's called, but it was she's a real transformation agent. So we had a conversation with her about the country, about climate change and that sort of thing. But today we talk industrialization on the transformation platform. Adil Chabaleng, good to have you in the studio.
Thank you so much.
So your business has been around a while, though. I mean, it's not a definitely not a startup. Just tell us about your business now. Help us understand what you do. People just see a perspective of who Adil is, and then we'll start talking transformation.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Adrian. Whitford Group is really a black management as well as a research advocacy as well as lobby group that has actually evolved over a period of time. We started off in investment banking, looking at how to place funds, actually to manage funds, asset management, a whole lot of other things. And then we graduated to a point whereby we realized that, look, it's good to actually manage other people's funds.
Yeah.
Advise people to go into equities, be able to actually create value for others. But what about ourselves? We were black executives, still are black executives. And a key decision was made to say, look, let's jump in and become the entrepreneurs ourselves within an organization, within a group, but become entrepreneurs as well as entrepreneurs and look for opportunities similarly to the way we did it for our customers. So we created a group which looked at now private equity opportunities where we bought into previously, you know, unempowered companies, white companies that were looking for black empowerment partners. On top of it, we went back and said, look, with the investment knowledge we have, with the research we have developed over time, how do we take that and capitalize it to create our own black empowerment fund as well as value? And that's really what happened within the Whitford Group. We specialized in research. We looked at aspects in terms of advisory, and then we looked at strategy. Strategy being critical in the sense that it assists you in terms of being able to execute on whatever objective, business plan, whatever programs that you want to go and undertake. Okay. So that was critical from our point of view in terms of establishing of our Whitford brand.
Okay, and what does the Black Empowerment Fund do?
The Black Empowerment Fund within Whitford specializes on just making sure that we can actually become significant players in the industry. Okay. We have a legacy which is still difficult to actually do away with, in a sense that a lot of the time people look at black people as empowerment partners, not necessary participants. You are an armchair empowerment partner. You sit in the company and you're only told, deal with your black people in government, wherever the strategic interest, but you're not participants.
Build the connection base and open up doors or whatever. Yeah, but you're more than that.
Yeah. So we're more than that. We went into ownership. We went into strategic ventures. We created our own technology solutions as well as products. And we diversified in that market. And we became very strong and understood that the market is looking for solutions like ourselves, things that we can provide and things that we can do to create value in the market.
Okay. All right. Well, we're grateful that you're here. You also have strong views and understanding of industrialization.
Yeah.
And I think off the conversation, we've got Louis here. We call him the old man to bring some wisdom into the conversation. Alison Yandu couldn't make it. He let me know late last night. Unfortunately, would have loved to be part of this conversation. But demystify industrialization. Am I right in saying government is pushing industrialization and very clearly want to create black industrialists? Okay, so what is the agenda there? And then just factually, and then let's go and demystify it a bit. Let's try and contextualize it in today's world, because there would be very strong views that says, hold on, there was the industrialization age, which is now actually over. We're now in the information age and content age, but maybe we're not. So let's just kick off with, what is government trying to do?
Look, I think government's initiative around black industrialization is strongly driven on the interest of making sure that instead of making black people sort of bystanders in the economic value chain, they should become participants. not just as consumers, but as people who are actually involved in the vertical value chain, production, value addition, you know, issues such as development of invention, technology, manufacturing, the various steps and aspects of it. So when you define black industrialization, you're defining now the coming of age. After 20 years of our democracy, we've been battling with understanding what should be BEE as such. So as a result, government then had to make a decision and saying, what do we define now as the real era of making sure we can push strategic empowerment, industrialization in this case, meaning purely taking a solution, what you call it, taking products and creating a manufacturing process out of it. So in this case that we're looking at, the programs that government is currently running is empowering and funding emerging manufacturers, emerging value addition people, emerging people who are actually involved in the value chain processes to actually create enterprises that will be purely black owned, not necessarily undiluted in the black ownership, but must be majority black owned. And with that majority black ownership and leadership and management, they should be able to produce economic value that will be able to drive the significant upcoming. Right now, there isn't really many black industrialists.
Upcoming, I was going to ask you now, do we have a good example or two or three of pure, genuine black industrialists in our country?
You name me one.
That's what I'm trying to come up with now. We've got very good empowerment partners, people who built massive empires because of the previous wave of triple BEE or BEE.
BEE, yeah.
Yeah, but in real industrialization, no.
Herman Mashaba?
No, he's not an industrialist.
Herman Mashaba is not an industrialist.
He's a businessman. He's a pure businessman and a BEE businessman as well, you could say, eventually. But industrialist, although they manufactured hair products and these
Herman Mashaba doesn't manufacture anymore. I mean,
no,
he's got
he
partnership with manufacturers, but he himself is no longer involved.
So he's not the ideal example
within the manufacturing value chain. Yeah.
So isn't that sad? We stop right here in our tracks and we say, "Whoa, can't really think of a
you can't
couple of
that's what I said. Mention name me one. You know anybody who knows of a black industrialist really from the top of their mind?
No, that's a very true comment.
We can talk about black empowerment. Partners, players, black empowerment,
all those things, yeah,
you know, sort of equity holders, whatever, shareholders in various enterprises. But in terms of black industrialists, people who go in and create serious, serious, magnificent value chain processes, manufacturing, people who go into value addition, people who go into really processing the ore that comes out of the mineral sector and produces final end product. You can't find anybody.
Who's Sikulu Mchali?
I wouldn't know.
Someone just said, we've got someone who's going to run a show, and they'll be chatting to leading SA industrialist, Sikulu Mchali, about obtaining success in business. So we should find out about that. But
is he an industrialist?
Well, that's the wording here on my screen, but we'd have to look into whether... But certainly well-known ones, if you don't know them, with the greatest of respect, and I'm also in the circles of business, then it's good enough a reason for us to debate and discuss this.
Yeah.
Just tell me how this balances with the need for empowering the masses. Because many would say BEE failed because it made a few rich and certainly not the masses. Then you have companies like SLC, for example, who want to share the pie with their staff. So they come up with a employee scheme where employees will own a part of the business. But that seems to be against almost the spirit of where government is going when it comes to ownership. Government is pushing industrialization. So how do we balance that? Is this going against that initial thought of wanting to empower as many South Africans as possible or not? Will this not create a few rich, wealthy black guys?
Yeah. Look, the scheme of BEE has been around for over 20 years almost, right? And in that context, it has succeeded to an extent of literally neutralizing and diluting the old patterns of ownership.
Yeah.
That we can't take away.
Yeah.
There is a significant level of ownership by black people who are participating within the value chain in the industry and the sectors and the economy particularly. But in terms of producing an industrialist, there hasn't been. As I said to you, in the mining sector, there are no industrialists who are black. You cannot even say to me one company smelters platinum, for instance, and who's the lead industrialist in that company. You would, for instance, in the past, people would say Patrice Motsepe. Patrice Motsepe doesn't smelter.
No.
He's a mining company. They mine ore and then produce it to the surface. From the surface, there is smelters that are owned by the Anglos and the others who are taking it from the smelting process, smelt it, and then take it to the secondary level of refinery. They are not producing products. They are not doing anything that is value addition within the full economic value chain that we're looking at.
Okay. Do we want a balance between broad-based black economic empowerment, which I think the spirit of that was to empower more people, as opposed to the beginning of just black economic empowerment, which seemed to empower a minority. So now we moved further towards broad-based, and now the concept of black industrialization comes in. Are we trying to find the balance between those two?
No. It's actually a continuation of black and BEE. Black economic empowerment is an overall arcing program around it.
Okay.
Industrialization is an element that actually now takes on broad-based black economic empowerment to the next height, to the next phase, to the next level.
Okay, and so it is building on. It's not just something
else. No, it's not
else.
A disjuncture policy which is actually conceptualized around taking away the old and replacing it with the new. No. This is a particular program that is actually aimed at empowering the current enabled, sort of institutional instruments like your policies, like your equity requirements, like your transformation policies and all of that. Mm. But it empowers it by saying it's about time black people move away from the patterns of being being really like sort of non-participants in the economic value chain to becoming participants. Let me give you a classical example.
Mm.
All of us in South Africa consume tea every day. Do you know of any black person who makes a kettle that we all drink that tea from?
No.
And majority people are black people.
Yeah.
So why don't we go to that route where we'll have one kettle maker, it's just one example, who's black, whom we can all rally around, support. We have the Russell Hobbs of the world who produces kettles that we use, but they're not black.
Mm.
See, so the idea and the mindset around black industrialization is looking at people who can start producing products, goods, services, and solutions that are purely and endemically black, and they can go into massive scale operations, starting small, starting with concepts, but ending up with magnificent products.
It's pure entrepreneurialism, isn't it?
Pure.
It's real. Do we want, just a quick question, and Richard wants to come in. Are we wanting those who have financially and from a wealth perspective benefited from the ownership participation in the past? Do we want them to migrate now and say, right, I do have wealth. Let me use this wealth to now literally go and create this factory that produces the kettles. So this is where the Patrice Motsepe is as a start, and many others should actually start thinking industrialization.
They should be.
For some reason they don't. I mean, that's big risk. That's where you put a lot of capital in, and that can come down very fast. But we've got to get there.
Mm.
Richard, sorry, you wanted to jump in. Sorry.
I was going to say, I think, you know, for me, the question actually also now centers on this whole. So there's the transformation need, and I'm very aware of that. But then I put my business hat on and I go, okay, in an economic perspective, I mean, you know, you have the principles of risk return.
Yeah.
You have the principles of risk management. You have the principles of diversification and concentration risks. So, for example, I mean, it's a crazy example, but the kettle example. Let's stay there. I mean, reality. Are we ever going to whether it be a black or white or any color industrialist, doesn't make sense for us to be producing kettles in South Africa is the fundamental question. And so I'm with the whole concept of an industrialist, but my caution is we better be very careful about where we choose to go and create the industrialists. That it's got to be in the right environment. Or you may end up with a challenge. I mean, I'm often reminded of that good old thing of, you know, NASA spent I don't know how many millions trying to figure out how to get a pen that would write in space.
Mm.
The Russians just used a pencil. And you know, it's that, you know, well, you know, do I need to do this myself, or do I need to learn that or accept that I can get it somewhere else and just move on? And so picking the right type
yeah.
of environments for industrialization is critical, because if we don't, the reality is no matter how well-intentioned you are, the laws of supply and demand and economics will override everything else we do. Yeah. And the reality is that it's got to be workable. Otherwise, it will fail from a numbers perspective. You know, yeah. And I'm the numbers boy. So
okay, you're the numbers guy. Adele, if I can just also throw in to the mix as you respond, I guess with this program, with this initiative, which must happen, we also must caution. In the bigger scheme of things, we know we had the industrialization age.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we are in a new world. So as we embrace this, we mustn't step back. But we must step forward and embrace modernization and digitalization and maybe some of the things Richard said. And that's interesting, is that we – because I get a feeling sometimes that we are in our own local transformation agenda focused on very important things like land reform, resources, you know, take over the mines, whatever it is. And that's all important, but let's not lose focus on – the modern world and where it's going. One would focus on something wrong and then blink your eyes and suddenly you actually have lost power because the world has shifted on. Your comments on that?
I think a quick one. Look, we shouldn't be maybe sort of preempting what should not be. Perceptions are always deceiving. We have a perception to think that government's promotion of black industrialization will maybe yield negative effects. I don't think that's an issue. Right now, what we should be focusing on saying, what does this black industrialization mean in its context? Mm. And that is why the demystifying of black industrialists should be, or industrialization as such. If you look at various countries, I'll give you a simple name like Korea, all right? You have a Hyundai company. Who was Hyundai? Hyundai was a man who started off his business in a garage, in a simple home garage.
Difficult to believe, eh?
They had problems with finding parts of Mercedes-Benz's, the cars they used to import into Korea. They couldn't find parts, and then suddenly the market emerged. They needed to repair the cars, they needed to maintain them, they needed to service them. So a market was created out of it. Secondary to that was a need to say then, how do we find parts to replace these things just in time for us when we require them? There wasn't such parts. They had to wait for a long time. They had to do all sorts of other things. Eventually, a secondary market emerged to say, look, why don't we become the OEM partners? Original equipment makers, we approach them, we say, look, on your behalf, we can do X, Y, Z. And based on that, give us the license to do it with you on your behalf so that you are not burdened with having to wait or having to import and all of those things, the risks which were involved at that time, right? From the OEM part of it, they graduated to becoming the original equipment manufacturers. They started the Hyundai brand range, as well as a whole lot of other things, right? That was the discussion of the sort of migrationary period process and phases relating to industrialization. In South Africa, we're talking the same thing. It's just, unfortunately, we're using black as a tag and a name for industrialization. That's it. So the perceptions must be removed to say that we will face a risk of failing if we place black people into the industrial context or placing them into the industrial forefront of this particular revolution. Afrikaners did it very well. Apartheid was an evil system, but Afrikaner industrialization was brilliant.
Adele, can I just mention why empathy, what you say? I grew up exactly the problem. Afrikaners said, you know, we're farmers and we're professional people, but we're not industrialists. And the Oppenheimers will not allow us into the sector. They had to start and fight through until became the whole value chain, etc. They had to fight the same battle. That's why I understand the whole fiber of what you're saying. It's not really a black-white issue. It's a case of a mind shift. I love it, yes.
From wanting jobs and being professionally qualified, all those are important, to being partners in economic empowerment, and now industrialists. If we don't create industrialists, I think we have a problem. Even in America, you know, how many big black industrialists do you have versus, you know, they're the top sportsmen and this and that. Have they had a program where these guys have become big industrialists as opposed to so it's something that we must overcome. We must get there.
We have to overcome the legacies of feeling inadequate. Look, the world is a global marketplace. The world is a global competitive marketplace, right? We are not going to shy away from the competitive advantages like the Chinese have, the competitive advantages like the Europeans have, like the Brazilians, like the Americans have. All of them have created their own unique competitive advantages. We have our own competitive advantage, but what we're doing with it is only extraction and importation. We are very strong economic drivers from an extractive economy to actually importing that whole extractive value and not doing anything in that whole value chain process. We come to a point whereby we can even take a mineral 1,400 kilometer distance, passing all various value chain centers that could have actually used that particular mineral for processing into something else. But we pass all of that, we actually load it up onto a ship, take it off as far as possible we can, and make sure we never see it again. What happens on the other side of the world? I can tell you, I've been there. You go to these manufacturing centers.
They are the industrialized.
Do you know what happens? It's strange. You get into the industrial hubs. There are mini cities, most of them, like the Chinese and the others. All right. A ship comes in, docks, there's a rail siding next to it. It takes up and tips it into a rail siding. A rail wagon takes it, not far too long, distant, into the shipyard or whatever, what do you call it, the rail yard. In the rail yard is a mountain of our minerals. Mountain.
Yes, yeah.
Commodities or whatever you call it. It's sitting there. From there, what they just have is a conveyor belt into the factory. The factory starts processing it into white refinery processing, smelting it, and then producing the goods and then the, what do you call it, the products that they want out of it. When that shipment leaves, which is already processed, when it leaves that factory, it's already in a container with a product already wrapped, shipped, and then it goes back to some of the countries of origin as a finished, finalized product.
It's weird, isn't it?
it's a strange thing.
Yeah, Japan is a beautiful example of that. They hardly have any resources, and yet they become a world giant on the same principle, buying your own stuff back. Yeah, it's ironic.
At a huge exchange rate variance, of course. Now, I was going to just comment. I think for me, the one thing that's always been very key is to say, well, why do we allow that mineral extraction profile to exist? And I think the reality is, as let's take this away from the South African context and talk about Africa as a continent. I think we've always suffered from an extractive mindset. I mean, if you look at what happened back in the day, I was reading the other day, De Beers has just sold their old sorting house head offices in London. And one of the things that they talked a little about the history of the building in this article, and how this housed all of the diamonds that had been sourced predominantly from South Africa and the surrounds. And then right at the close of the article, they mention that all of this central sorting and selling that was previously had taken place in London now takes place in Gaborone. And I thought to myself, well, you know, logic would dictate that, you know, that's kind of where, you know, this is where the market is, or where the source is. What's easier, you know, move the bring a few buyers to the source here, or move everything that you've had to extract all the way to London. I mean, it does make sense that it's sitting here. And I think, you know, obviously logic prevails and infrastructure is now good enough, etc. But I think a lot of, let's call it those historical extractive scenarios, have arisen as a result of infrastructure and capability of the past over many hundreds of years. And the reality is that is no longer the case.
Okay.
You know? Well, I see. That's why, Audrey, you know, from our point of view, leadership platform and it's about leadership transformation. We believe all this is about leadership transformation, and then the rest follows, because it's a case of leadership thinking and mindset. And I think that's the area that obviously we focus on.
Adil, what must happen? A couple of pointers for us to succeed at this venture to create black industrialists. What must happen? What are the chess pieces that must fall in place?
Look, the key issues that needs to be tackled is perceptions. The aspect of knowledge is critical as well. Understanding, you know, economics of scale as such, you know, micro economics of scale, understanding the global and local, you know, challenges with relation to building and actually constructing this particular industrialization, let alone the word black, but industrialization and reindustrialization as a concept itself, and issues of really technology, in innovation, inventions, going into deep understanding on what needs to be done to really reinvigorate, revitalize this particular sector that is quietly disappearing. You know, we're sitting all of here. all the equipment you look around is foreign equipment, technology, including the plastic on the bloody computers. This is not rocket science. I mean, these are things that should be done locally. We should be importing what we can't be doing. We shouldn't be importing things that could be done locally, and we end up becoming the consumers of the world. We are a net consumer. Unfortunately, as South Africans, all of us, sitting with our expensive watches, cars, houses, you know, equipment, technology.
And what is a modern day industrialist? Okay, you have the obvious ones. We still have to produce the plastic and the this and the that. What, I mean, Apple is a modern day, or whoever produces, let's say iPhones. They are industrialists.
Totally.
Okay, it's a modern day.
No, they're Chinese.
Yeah, but they're industrialists. You know, you can also be an industrialist locally, but make use of strengths in China and other places. Why not? You know, why can't you? This is the base, so it doesn't. Everything doesn't have to happen here. You can use other, you know, capabilities across borders to become the industrialist.
Correct.
As an example,
the example of your kettle boiler maker, your water boiler maker, your kettle. Russell Hobbs does not manufacture any of this plastic equipment as well as the technology. He gets it done in China somewhere, or maybe in Taiwan, or maybe in some countries where he
actually... But he's the industrialist,
But he's an industrialist. He's the brand behind it. The countries that have decided that, look, for instance, LG. LG doesn't manufacture any of this technology that you find at Samsung, including our own technology that we use today. None of them are manufactured by those people, but they've created industrial giants behind them. Individual organizations, companies, names, as well as businesses behind, who are all of them have aggregated to producing a simple one brand that represents the interest of that particular market.
So government has now started this, and they're pushing it. Where are we seeing life?
Look, currently
where is it starting to happen?
It's a new idea which was just launched in late last year, right? The process has been going on independently. Government has produced the finalized, like literally, framework of what guides the principle of funding an industrialist, black industrialist.
Okay.
Not saying that government should be the driver alone. Business should actually drive its own processes. You know, this is not a government-only led process. It's an industry-led process. So the particular process of it is, they've opened up a call currently to fund black industrialists. DTI is doing a lot of that paperwork right now. You apply to DTI, you give them your idea, you give them the concept of what you want to do. They evaluate the processes, they look at what you want, and then they help you through the gate stages of how they can fund you. That's one aspect to it.
Okay.
Secondary aspect to it is independent people, independent industrialists, shouldn't be waiting for government to come to their doors and knock on them and say, come up with an industrial idea. Do it on your own. You know, we're talking about garage-based opportunities, home-based opportunities, micro-industries-based opportunities.
That is where we need to get, definitely. I mean, that mindset we can
existing businesses that are struggling, that needs a boost. Bring in a black industrialist inside and say, listen, guys, we know we're about to fold up. This is what we've been doing. You know, what can we do to turn around this business and create something? And with the backbone of what we already have, let's support each other and grow. That's what I refer to as black industrialization, and really bringing about industrialization back into the fold of South Africa.
Okay. Are you on that journey?
Yeah.
Okay, good. We'll keep an eye on you. Stay close to this industrialist. Thank you so much. Time flies. Adil Chabaleng, thank you for coming in and trying to demystify this thing. As you say, it's fairly early. We have a long way to go, don't we?
True.
But we've got to change our mindset. That's the big thing, that it's possible. And not just black on white, but black on black. You know, we black businessmen and women must realize I can do this.
Yeah. Look, it's something that will boost a lot of African morale. I mean, it's always been known that black people can't do much for themselves. It's a myth. We're doing it already. We've been independent. We've not been in corporations for how many years? And as black businessmen, we've been surviving. The question is, what are we doing different that makes us successful?
Yes.
That's what needs to start happening. The perceptions, the support as well, the government programs that will actually enable to catapult these programs into a reality. But black industrialization is already happening. Young black people are doing things for themselves. They just need a bit of support, push up, as well as angels who can support them.
You're right. Find it. It's there already. Let's not think we're starting from scratch.
Correct, yeah.
Adil Chabaleng, thank you so much for coming in today. We'll have you back. There was a fascinating conversation. Next up, our leadership and education conversation. Stay with us. That's the last half hour of our three-hour Leadership in Transformation show.
This is CliffCentral.com.